Translation. If a foolish member of the twice born classes, Brahmana, Kshatriya, and Vaishya, forces his wife to drink his semen out of a lusty desire to keep her under control, he's put after death into the hell known as Malapaksha. There he is thrown into a flowing river of semen, which he is forced to drink. Purport. The practice of forcing one's wife to drink one's own semen is a black art practiced by extremely lusty persons. Those who practice this very abominable activity say that if a wife is forced to drink her husband's semen, she remains very faithful to him. Generally, only low-class men engage in this black art. But if a man born in a higher class does so, after death he is put into the hell known as Malapaksha. There he is immersed in the river known as Sukranami, and forced to drink semen. In this world, some persons are professional plunderers who set fire to others' houses or administer poison to them. Also, members of the royalty or government officials sometimes plunder mercantile men by forcing them to pay income tax and by other methods. After death, such demons are put into the hell known as Sharamayadana. On that planet, there are 720 dogs with teeth as strong as thunderbolts. Under the orders of the agents of Yamaraj, these dogs voraciously devour such sinful people. Purport. In the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said that in this age of Kali, everyone will be extremely disturbed by three kinds of tribulations: scarcity of rain, famine, and heavy taxation by the government. Because human beings are becoming more and more sinful, there will be a scarcity of rain, and naturally no food grains will be produced. On the plea of relieving the suffering caused by the ensuing famine, the government will impose heavy taxes, especially on the wealthy mercantile community. In this verse, the members of such a government are described as dasur, thieves. Their main activity will be to plunder the wealth of the people, whether a highway robber or a government thief. Such a man will be punished in his next life by being thrown into the hell known as Sharamayadana, for he will suffer greatly from the bites of ferocious dogs. So the basic point that is coming across here is that the Lord has established different kinds of rules and regulations to be followed by everyone. And then if we follow these things, then we become actually happy, because then we are in connection with the Lord. But the problem comes if we don't follow the Lord's directions, then so much difficulty arises. So now the whole plan, the whole cosmic creation, is to serve the Supreme Lord. It is a matter of exchange between the Lord and his devotees. The Lord and his devotees, then they have a natural affinity for serving each other. And this is the natural relationship. Krishna is the supreme controller. And from him everything is common. And that includes us. And so our position is to serve him. So if we do that, then we are happy. And if we don't, then neither is Krishna happy, or neither are we happy, because we're not doing what is our natural nature. So now, since the living entity has wanted to be separate from Krishna, try to enjoy separately from Krishna, then this material world has been established. Because it's a general principle that you do not put those who know how to behave properly with those who don't know how to behave properly. There must be some distinction. Otherwise, then, by the nature, by association, the subtler aspects get overcome by the more gross aspects. So those who want to enjoy, they are put in this material world. And the purpose, actually, of the material world is to bring one back to Krishna. So Krishna has made all kinds of different social structures, rules and regulations so that we can follow, so that we can again come to his lotus feet. That's the only purpose of all these rules. There's no other purpose. Say Rupa Goswami, he makes the point that someone who either neglects the rules because of lack of knowledge, because of the mode of passion, that they give up such things, not understanding why they should be done. Or those who completely misunderstand the point that therefore re-establishing our relationship with the Lord and stick very tenaciously to them and demand everyone must follow them without understanding the purpose, then both of these understandings are wrong. Because the only reason to follow the rules is to please the Lord. So we have a conditioned nature. A conditioned nature must be engaged. And by engaging it in Krishna's service without attachment to the results, then we become transferred to the spiritual realm. We perform our duties with the desire for the results from those duties, the material fruits. We want to enjoy the fruit of the duty. Then it keeps us in the material world. We get bound. But if we perform our duties without desiring the fruit, means for ourselves, we of course do our work nicely to try to do it for Krishna and get the best result. But the result's not for us, it's for Krishna. Then we find we're not bound by the material nature. Then it's the living entity relating with the super soul. And the body and the conditioned nature are just interacting. The body, the conditioned nature, the modes of nature are just interacting. We have our desire, and Krishna is fulfilling that desire. The modes of nature are carrying that out. So we are attached to the activities of the modes of nature, which are the material world. In this way, we are free. We are not connected with this material world. We are free. So now, if we can behave in that way, we come to the liberated platform. And from there, our devotion to the Lord naturally increases. So all these different rules are given to establish the proper mentality. The proper mentalities are there. Means here, someone who is so disturbing, means people are performing their natural duties. Right? You perform your duty, you have a quota. And you get a result from that. And then what you need is, according to your position, is you use and you engage yourself in the Lord's service, seeing everything as the Lord's grace. But if we see that someone unnecessarily tries to take what is not theirs, like a plunder or untrained royalty or government officials, then this is a disturbance to the public, disturbance to the people. They cannot perform their duties properly. Their minds are in anxiety. So then whatever they could get naturally by their duties, their prescribed duties, then it's not enough to live. So they themselves also have to take through the same processes. They also have to take up improper behavior to maintain themselves. So these kind of personalities disturb the whole society. And because of this, since the purpose of society is to go back to Godhead, and they're a total disturbance to it, naturally there's a hell that they should go through. Then we see here is that those who are members of the twice-born class, the purpose is to definitely directly go back to Godhead. One has that ability. In the previous verse, it is mentioned, someone takes birth in an aristocratic family, royalty, or in a religious family, of Brahmins, then this it means that previously they were performing devotional activities by the previous connection with devotional service. But they did not complete their service and they had so much material desire. So after going to the heavenly planets, they take birth in such families. The only purpose is to take up devotional service again. So if they don't do this and they use it for all kinds of material prestige, wealth, you know, and in this case then that being very attached to the family and using very devious means to maintain that attachment, then there is a hell below those things. Because this, the human life is not meant for these things. It's meant for elevating. So we perform our duties, and Krishna is pleased with that. Because we are thinking that I am doing these duties. I have a particular, psychological makeup, my mind, my intelligence, work in a certain way, the physical body has its attributes. And these are all given to me by Krishna. By my previous desires, this has been established. And Krishna has given me this now to again take up my devotional activities. So taking my abilities, I engage in devotional service. And this service is being done for Krishna. Then we become happy. Then we become satisfied. Otherwise, then we just become bound up, thinking we're the doer, we're the body, we're all these things. The devotee understands they're not the body, but understands the body does have a nature. Just like we go into the kitchen and there's a knife. So we know we are not the knife. If we use the knife to cut something, we don't think I am this knife. We know we're separate from the knife. But we know that the knife will do work, certain work. It will cut things. If we want to grind things into a paste, the knife will not do it. We think, no, you know, we can do whatever we like, and it won't work. The knife does what a knife does. You have to get the grinding stone, and that will grind things into a paste. Or you get the grater, that will grate things. Like this. You get a pot, you can boil things in. You can't boil things on the counter. But you don't cut things inside the pot. So like this, we look at it, that we're different from these things. We see our body, and we see the mind, and we decide, this can be engaged in these kinds of services. Then we do those for Krishna. And when we're doing those for Krishna, then we do them without desiring the fruits of that for ourselves. If we desire the fruits, then that means we think we are the doer, and so we are that person. Let us say we are doing administration. Then we think, I am a Kshatriya. No. We understand the body, mind I have is that of suitable for Kshatriya work. I do the Kshatriya work. But I don't do it from the motive of mixed passion and goodness. I do it from the platform of goodness, that I'm doing it for Krishna without desiring fruit. So the results that come, they belong to Krishna. And I simply try to establish myself in yoga, in service to the Supreme Lord. This way we use the body and mind in the Lord's service, but we don't identify with it and become attached to it. It's a very, very simple point. Krishna points this out time and time again. So someone who thinks they are the doer means the modes of nature are doing everything. We are desiring. The modes of nature are carrying these things out. Now if we think, I am doing it because of my endeavor, it's happening, then naturally then it's, okay, you think you're the one that's doing it and getting the results, so therefore you are responsible for the result also. You can enjoy the result, and you can also suffer it. And then all sinful activities are accrued from the activity. And all pious activities are accrued because of the activity. And in this way we become bound to the material world. Whether it's pious or impious, we're still bound. So the devotee who doesn't think like this, he understands that I desire to serve Krishna, and Krishna, by his sanction, then allows that the body and mind will act in a certain way, but that result is belongs to Krishna. That is for Krishna. So the good result we get, that is Krishna's. And by this mentality, all the sinful activities in the heart, all the nonsense of the heart will be burnt up. Because we are not wanting the activity. So what are we doing? We're not creating anything. If we simply see, I want to serve Krishna in a particular way, Krishna sanctions it, the modes of nature carry it out, then what is there to bind us? Because we're not thinking we're the doer. We understand the Lord, the material nature, they are carrying things out. But we must desire to do the proper things. Otherwise, one may think that, okay, the material nature is carrying it all out, the Lord is carrying it out, and I'm just being forced to do all these things. So if that was the case, then why would there be rules and regulations? Why would there be hell? Why would there be heaven? No, because what you desire and what you try to do, then you have to choose the proper thing. Choice is there. It's always there. Krishna simply sanctions what you've already decided, wanted to do. That's all. We desire to do something, we endeavor to do something, then Krishna sanctions that. So our independence and his independence do not, there's no problem. Problem comes is if we try to be independent, we get the reaction. Well, if we're not thinking I am independent, we don't get the reaction. So we become purified. So here, these hellish planets are for those who are not following the Vedic culture and are giving trouble to others. Then there's a disturbance. Just by following the prescribed duties properly, that at least one is situated nicely. If one can do that without desiring the results, one is actually purified, elevated. But if one goes against the Lord's instructions given in the culture, then naturally there must be some punishment for it. Because these very activities that the Lord has given are the activities that can take you out of the material world. So by Krishna's grace, he's given these. And if we ignore them, we're ignoring the supremacy of the Lord. And so naturally, authority has to be shown. Because if someone doesn't accept, it has to be pointed out at some point. Okay, in this lifetime, you've gone along thinking there's no authority. I will do what I want. But then in the next lifetime, then Krishna shows us, no, actually, all this time you were thinking there's none, but it's been carefully recorded. And now you will get the results of your improper activity. So he sees Yamaraj there, he sees the Yamadutas. You know, in this verse, that he either sees the Supranadi or he sees the 720 ferocious dogs. Like that. And then he understands that all the things he wanted to do and control and enjoy, it actually doesn't work like that. We were just given the chance to make a choice. Do we want to please Krishna or do we not want to please Krishna? And then we end up in this situation. So it all works out in the end. So the purpose of all this is just to establish the proper service to the Lord. That those who are intelligent understand, I will serve the Lord because it must be done. It is my nature. I am Krishna's servant. Somehow or another I'm in this material world. Somehow or another I'm in this situation. And so I'll make the best use of the bad bargain. Engage us all in Krishna's service. Then, in this way, I'll please the Lord. And that is the proper use. But if not, then at least you follow the Lord's order. It's indirect. The indirect path, the first is the direct path. I understand I'm serving the Krishna, I serve Krishna according to my nature. Indirect path means I'll follow my nature, but I will take the fruits. But at least I'm following God's law, God's direction. And then, for those who don't want to do that, who just want to make trouble, do things however they like, then there's some reaction. They also follow Krishna's law, but it's not by choice, it's by force. They chose to be forced to follow. So this is what is being discussed here. Is there any questions or comments? Yes. Say again? Will we miss the mixed the gross and subtle? Oh, I'm saying, yeah. I was mentioning that by associating with the lower modes, the higher modes can be contaminated. because of the strength of them. Just like if you have a subtle smell, if you bring in a gross smell, it overpowers. So then he made the point, just like we see that because of its natural, profound grossness, the American culture is slowly just creeping and taking over the whole world. Everybody wears blue jeans and they go to McDonald's and, you know, watch all the American movies and all these things. So that's the point. The Vedic culture is those who could follow the culture, then they lived where all the civilized people would be living, whether in the cities or in the villages. But those who could follow the Vedic rules and that, they would live there. Those who couldn't follow the Vedic rules then would live in the forest, away from everybody else. But then those were divided into two. Those that couldn't follow the rules but didn't make any trouble. They weren't thieves and stuff like that. So they would interface with those who could properly follow. You know, because in the forest there's so many valuable things, herbs and minerals and different things. They would collect those and they would come and bring them and trade with those who are living in the villages and cities. And this way they'd maintain themselves and there'd be an interaction between these uncivilized and civilized humans. But those who were totally uncivilized, who didn't know how to behave at all, like that, then they lived farther in the forest and didn't associate. Because of this problem of just being attracted by the lower modes. That is why it is so rare, the process of devotional service. Because that means you're going the opposite. By association with the transcendence, one's giving up the material nature. But the difference is ignorance can easily overpower goodness. But because both of them are material. They're shadow. They have no substance, or asat. But transcendence is spiritual. It has substance. Therefore, the spiritual life, spiritual value, spiritual association can overpower that other. But it must be given in, you know, proper doses, proper amount to have the desired effect. Like that. So in this way, the spiritual life can progress despite all these other difficulties. Krishna even mentions in the Gita that best is that you perform activities in the mode of goodness, meaning do your prescribed duties without attachment. Basically, it comes down to that, without false ego. Then, if you can do that, if you're going to perform your duties in passion and ignorance, it's okay. It's not good, but it's okay as long as it's being done for Krishna. And because it's in connection with Krishna, there will be purification, though it's slow. And one may be easily distracted, because in passion and ignorance, one actually can't understand what's religion and what's not religion, what's to be done, what's not to be done. In 1831, Krishna mentions that understanding in the mode of passion means we don't know what is religion and what is not. We can get bewildered. And then in 32, then understanding ignorance, you think irreligion is religion, religion is irreligion. But in the mode of goodness, you actually understand what is the proper religion, what is to be done, what is not to be done, what is to be feared, what is not to be feared. And that is understanding the mode of goodness. Then from that platform, we can advance very, very nicely. So he's recommending like that. Because it's mode of goodness by nature is illuminating. While mode of passion and ignorance have a tendency to cover, to bind. But even if one has difficulty following, if one tries to do things for Krishna and keeps Krishna as the ultimate goal of work, one will still be elevated because one is in touch with reality. So that point is there. Though Krishna's personal opinion and recommendation is try to sit yourself on this platform of devotional service in the mode of goodness. But if not, at least devotional service, even as impassioned ignorance. But it's not highly recommended. Is that, says, that's the, it's a good point. Anything else? Yes.
So now that in the end you make that choice, when the activities perform that you did on the psychic platform, thinking, feeling, and willing, when does the living entity actually make that choice? When he actually, because the mind's, Prabhupada says the business of the mind involves over various subject matter looking for sense gratification. So it's always turning things up. And then you get a feeling for it. Is it actually when you desire to do something, that's your in choice? Or is it when you, even something comes into the mind, is it your choice making that, or is it just the activity of the mind?
Sananivasa's point is in the process of thinking, feeling, and willing, going from the subtle to the gross, then at what point is it actually our choice? You know, at what point do things start to happen? Are we getting the reaction? What point does this actually go on? There are some other things. Because the mind, all it's doing is hovering over the sense objects. Because the mind, it's naturally going to do that. It doesn't have any other option. Because the mind is connected to the senses. And the senses bring in information constantly, and it always goes through the mind. So that's just the mind's business. So it cannot be blamed for that. Now, the situation we find ourselves in, so that the kind of sense objects that the mind is, that the senses are coming in contact with, and that is bringing it in relation through the mind, that we've set in the past. Previously, because of our desires, that sets the scenario now. Just like, let's say, I want to go to Vrindavan. So I have this desire. So then with time, things start to organize that way. So at some point, I find myself on the train going to Vrindavan. Now, on this train, and you know, we have all kinds of interesting people and this and that, when we pull into Bihar, and you know, the whole state climbs on the train because it's their train anyway. And you know, like this and that, and all the, we're trying to take rest, and all the guys are coming and waking us up to see if we want tea and other things like this. So we find this a very disturbing situation. But we have created this situation because of our desire. We wanted to go to Vrindavan. So to get there, we must go through all that. So this is all part of the what do you say? It's called Fulan Muka or something like that. Or Ful Muki. Falan Muki. Means the fruit, the face of the fruit. The bud is there. We've created that. And so that bud is going to open in a certain way. So the situation has been created. We created it. We were sitting here very peacefully in one thought. We wanted to go to the other. But in doing that, then all these situations we must go through. We must go through the local rickshaw wallahs, and then the boat wallahs, and all the bus wallahs, and then in Calcutta, and then the taxis, and then the train rides, and then the taxis on the other sides, and the buses, and finally we get to where we want to go. So like that, the situation that we're experiencing now, the fruits and the experience we've created from before by our desires. Therefore, we have a certain kinds of senses that can pick up certain sense objects. And our mind then is also has this particular conditioning. Therefore, out of all the sense objects that come in, we pick a particular thing. Means the person who is not interested, let's say, in color, still sees the colors, but the mind doesn't pick on it as something to notice. They'll notice something else. You know, or the sounds. You hear all the sounds when everybody else hears, just the mind will pick out of it which ones it finds valuable. Or taste, it just picks out those things that it describes that it considers valuable. So like that, the mind will take from all the broad body of things that are going on and just take out of what it wants, due to its previous conditioning also. And these are previous desires, then are just carrying through. Just we get a different set of senses and body with which to get that. In other words, our present body is better for getting what we want than the last one. You know, specifically, it's tuned to what we actually wanted. So we get this body. Now, so that's all the mind's business is going through this. So when the mind, so basically all the mind does is accept and reject. So now we can either accept Krishna and reject Maya, or accept Maya and reject Krishna. Basically this is what it boils down to. Or, you know, somewhere in between, partially accepting Krishna, partially accepting Maya, partially rejecting Krishna, partially rejecting Maya. To that degree we accept Krishna, to that degree we reject Maya. Like that. So that's what it does. So depending upon that, then it's going to digest the process that it gets. Just like we see a pile of garbage. So now, as a human being, generally one would think that this is something detestable. Just due to our particular desires. But it's there. But the crow that's right next to us, or the dog, immediately goes over. Someone comes out of their house, dumps some garbage in the street, we just kind of move out of the way. And the dogs and the crows move forward and check out what's there. Maybe there's something interesting. So they will consider it, their mind by its particular conditioning of the modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance, will be attracted by a certain set of sense objects. So there's unlimited sense objects are there. You know, that we're all in this room, we're all subject to the same sense objects. But according to our modes, we're going to take which ones we like. That. Then after we've taken it, then we decide, do I want this or not? Right? So we see the garbage, the dog's seen the garbage. We move away from the garbage, the dog moves towards it. So it's accepted and we've rejected it. So thinking is the first thing, just comes through. You see, you think about it. Then you get the feeling, what you want to do in relationship to that. Then the willing, you actually do it. So at the willing stage, that's when you start to get the reaction, because then you think, I am doing. But if you just think, I want to serve Krishna, and we should do so in a nice way, I want to be clean for Krishna, I'm going to the temple, I don't want to go near the garbage, then there's no reaction to that. There's no disturbance with that. Because it's not us, it's not ours. But if we think, I'm so clean, I am so wonderful, then we're identifying, we're thinking this is ours, so we want the fruit of that. So we want others to recognize that we have our prestige because we are so clean. Then we fall into this trap of the previous verse. Is that we lose our position because of our pride. Pride of our birth, pride of our knowledge, pride of our prestige. Like that. So it's very interesting here that Prabhupada makes this basic blanket statement. Because of his previous connection with Bhakti Yoga, man is born into a prestigious family of Brahmins or aristocrats. So that's the only reason they're born into that. Basically is what's being mentioned here. So then if one misuses it, then he becomes degraded, Naradhama, lowest. Because it's interesting in the description of Naradhama, he has made that choice. Means Mudha is no choice. He's fixed in one work. He thinks one work is all in all. It gets me my livelihood. It's my position in society. It's everything for me. So that's a worker in the mode of ignorance. But the worker in the mode of goodness then does things, understanding things as they are, in knowledge, performing prescribed duties in proper understanding, without desiring the fruit. So then here he has the choice. So the Naradhama means he has the choice to come in contact, but he rejects. The Muda generally doesn't even get the interest in the beginning or take it seriously, even though it exists. It's a very different position. So the mind just does what it does. Therefore, the devotee doesn't get overly worried about it. That's just the mind's business. It just has to be retrained. That's all. By conditioning, it functions under the desires of the modes of nature. We want material enjoyment, so it has three options: passion, goodness, or ignorance. And it will therefore develop the understandings, the activities, be attracted to certain foodstuffs, be attracted to certain kinds of sacrifice, charity, austerity. It will have certain kinds of determination. because of the material desire. But now when we change to one to please Krishna, then we change how the mind will function. Now the mind will function on the transcendental platform in the mode of goodness. So it has to be retrained. It's not that all those things may not come through the mind, but it's just we'll react differently because of our desires. Like that. Being established in the mode of goodness by devotional practice, then we'll react differently. But it's not that these things don't come through the mind. It's just like in the court of Brahma, we discussed this. When Ganga Devi came into the court, then the cloth blew. And she was basically, you know, her body was exposed. So all the devatas who had divine qualities, they just turned their head. Because that's the natural reaction. But then one of the devatas, then he had more material lust in his heart, he looked at it. With desire. So then both Ganga and that Deva were thrown out of Brahma's court. Because everybody went through the same experience, but everybody except one person or two people reacted in the proper way. So then those two were removed from the court because they didn't belong there. Because all this lust and all that is all for in this planet on down. You want to look at Gurubhasi and get lusty, fine. But when you go above in this planet, the Janatapa of Satyalokas, then we don't, that doesn't, it's not allowed. So they were removed from that situation. Just like those who are improperly behaved cannot be situated in the spiritual world, but in the material world. Even in the material world, those who follow properly with detachment, then are in the Janatapa and Satyalokas. Those who follow properly with attachment, then are on the heavenly planets. Okay? Those who are mixed are here, and those who are spirit are on the lower planets. So like that, then it's natural to set up. So the situation is there, everyone will experience. But it's now what you do with that. And then depending on what you do, then you'll get the result. That Devata wanted to enjoy Ganga, so then the fruit of that came. He thought, I am this body, she is her body, I will enjoy it. So then that created a fruit. He became born as Shantana, and she became born as Ganga. I mean, she appeared here. And then they had to get married. And on the way down, then they picked up another band of, you know, misbehaved personalities with the eight vasus. They're trying to steal Vishwamitra's Surabhi cow. Like that. And so then they also came and were born as Ganga Devi's children. And of all of them, the most culpable for stealing the cow was then was the Vasu who became Bhishma. Because he actually pulled on the rope. Everyone else was trying to push. Like that, making noise. And he actually grabbed the rope. So because he grabbed the rope, then he had to stay. The other ones all went back. They understood their mistake and all that. So Ganga, they're born, and then she threw them back into the Ganga. Right? But Bhishma had to stay. So like this, it's all nicely, all the fruits of all their activities are done because they thought they were the doer. They thought they were the doer. So if we don't think we're the doer, the experience comes, we choose to serve Krishna in this situation, remember Krishna, there's no reaction. So we're purified. And in this way we go back to that thing. So the mind's going to do, just like Yamunacharya, and we're quoting him because he's a very advanced personality. He says, whenever my mind thinks of sex life, so here, the Uttamadikar, your mind goes that way. Your mind thinks of all kinds of stupid things. As soon as it comes, he rejects it. That's the difference. It comes into our mind, we may contemplate. Good, not good, his mind just immediately rejects it. So it doesn't mean that things don't come into the mind. But it's just that what you do with the mind. It's just going on. You know, like here, you have your shop on the streets of Delhi, and out in front of your shop there's a madman, you know, doing all kinds of weird things. You just don't notice. People come into your shop, you deal, you sell them things, all that. You don't concentrate on this madman. Madman's not going to get anything done for you. It's not going to help your service at all. So in the same way as the mind is behaving improperly, it's just ignored. The problem comes is, since time immemorial, we've identified with the mind. We think it's us. So what the mind thinks, we think we are thinking. It is our desire. It's just the mind's desire. That's all. It has nothing to do with us. We either desire to serve Krishna or serve Maya. Does that make sense? The fruit becomes ours. So that's going on. So this whole process of devotional service is removing those material desires in artists, or in other words, the demoniac nature. Demoniac nature means going against Krishna. So the first step is following Krishna's rules and regulations. You know, following sadhana bhakti, following prescribed duties. Then that's the first step. And then as we become purified, where then our doubts disappear, then we become attached to Krishna himself and serving Krishna like this. So so we just have to ignore it. And to do that then generally takes good association. We should try to be in association of those who can help us overcome these desires. Because they are working, either they are overcome them or they are endeavoring to overcome them. In any case, it's good, because when the mind is fixed, vyavasayatmika bhuti, then that, we can gain that. And once we're fixed, then everything works. Once we know what we want to do, we're fixed. Then things start to run properly for us, in the right direction. Then taking up devotional service becomes very serious. Before that, Maya doesn't have to worry so much. We become proud of what little bit we know, so she's caught us by the motive ignorance there. Then sometimes things go great, and then sometimes things don't go great, so we get washed back and forth by the motive goodness and ignorance. Like this, she's got us, you know, and then if we're not sure, should I do this, or, you know, do that, or you don't really know what's proper. You can't really identify what's the proper thing to do. She's got us compassion. You know, we can't really tell and decide what is to be done and what's not to be done. But as soon as we make that determination, then now it brings Sri Krishna, and that's called war with Maya. That stage of anartha nirvriti now means we've become serious, we've fixed our mind on Krishna, I'm going to get rid of these anarthas, then Maya wakes up. Before it's just easy. Now it's direct war. And then one has to maintain that, and then one advances this. One can maintain that, then one crosses that. And then slowly, then he becomes fixed more. It means now our determination is fixed, but Krishna is still testing us. So our externals aren't fixed. We become distracted. But then when finally it becomes fixed, then we are situated nicely in devotional service. And this stage is advanced devotional service.
Because now we know what we want. So once you know, you go quickly. Just like, if I'm not sure, should I go to Vrindavan, should I go to Puri, should I stay here, you know, maybe I should just go on Parikram here. I won't get anywhere, I'll be here for a long time. I can be here for months, years. But as soon as I decide, no, I'm going to Vrindavan, I could be there within 48 hours. So once that decision is made, that point, and one sticks to it, that's called advanced devotional service. That is the Madhyam Bhakti. That is advanced devotional service. So the difference between a Madhyam and a Uttam is very close. Because of not knowing what to do, then doesn't progress so quickly. But as soon as the devotee decides to become fixed, then the advancement is very fast. Because then that's clearing. See, when we're not fixed, that's offensive chanting. Because we're not really caring so much about the offenses, the anarthas. They happen, we don't really want them to happen, but we haven't made that determination that I'm going to stop them from happening. I'm going to make the determination to not do them. So when the choice comes up, I'm going to not take it. Or at least endeavor to, you know, practice that, make a practice of not taking it. So when you make that choice, then that's called the clearing stage. Because now you're aware of your offenses, and you're trying to get rid of them. Offensive chanting, we may or may not be aware. Generally, we're not aware. And even if we are, we don't care so much. You know? But once we decide to become very fixed, that's clearing stage. And then we progress very nicely. We know what we should do. We should do our duties for Krishna. I'm going to serve Krishna in this way.
Your actual real identity becomes more manifest.
Yes. That's what's happening. So you're switching identity. So as you switch identity to I'm a servant of Krishna, then the modes of nature, the identity that comes up from the modes of nature, that I am this body, mind, senses, then it becomes, the mind can be switched to the other side. The mind can be controlled by that. It becomes, that's a very good point, the identity change. So as we change our identity, then.
What happens to the karma at that time? You become determined to serve the Krishna, and you endeavor, and not even considered spiritually situated in this endeavor. So what happens to that karma that such an experience, a special experience?
What happens to that karma?
Yeah.
Basically, it just evaporates. The karma is asking what happens to that karma when we become fixed, you know, that we were supposed to experience. That karma just starts to evaporate. Because the karma is there because we identify with the work, that the work is us, the fruit is ours. So in that ignorance and passion, these things are there. But as soon as we don't identify like that, then these things start to go away. They just evaporate because there's no basis for it anymore. You know, it's just like I have the desire to go to Vrindavan, so everything in between is all connected to that desire. Right? Now, if before I started that trip, once I'm on the trip, I'm on the train. It's just the way it is. You know, so that's the situations we're in now. Is the corrupt karma, the fruit remains, because that's all we've already done and it's coming now. And in any case, we have to have a scenario to work in. We can't just stick us in the Brahman and we're going to perform pure devotional service. So material nature doesn't matter, it's all bad. You know? Wet stool, dry stool, it's all problems. You know? Someone's born in a humble, non-aristocratic family, then one could say, oh, it's very low class, but they can be humble very easily. Though they may be more attracted to bad habits. Someone in the aristocratic family, then theoretically it shouldn't be attracted to bad habits, but they may become proud. So because of this, both of them are bad, ultimately. Though if you're looking at it, okay, the dry stool I can cook with it, the wet stool I can't. So in this way I can say the dry stool is better than the wet. as they both do. So as we change the desire, so all those things that we had desires for, the seed, the sprout, then the whole scenario being about ready to be manifest, evaporates because the desire that created it went away. It means you remove the root of a tree, the root of the tree dies. So as soon as you change the desires and you don't want to please serve Krishna, I mean you don't want to serve Maya, you want to please Krishna, then all those weeds and all those things, they go away. So all that just disappears, dries up. But the prarabdha karma remains. It means the actual fruit of previous stuff, I'm getting it now, and I've got this body, you're not going to get rid of that so easily. Right? But we can change our whole mentality, how we work with it. Instead of thinking, I am this body, and I am this particular varna, and this particular ashram, you know, this nationality, this stuff, I engage this in Krishna's service. I recognize the nature, I engage it. But it's not me. It's just, this is what I had to work with for my previous karma. Then that goes away. And then Krishna, accordingly, what he wants to teach us and that, he may leave it as it is or reduce. Generally, he reduces the prarabdha karma, so the reactions aren't so severe. But something is there. Because when we say tolerance, you don't hate things that are auspicious, inauspicious, or you're attached to things that are auspicious, you're not disturbed by, you know, heat and cold or dualities. So you have to be experiencing them to prove yourself to be situated on an advanced platform. Because in the advanced platform, it doesn't matter anyway. You don't notice it. Because you have something higher. Someone who's just learning to cook will go into the kitchen and now it's so hot. So many, you know, smells, this, that, and so many things you have to wash and throw out. And so they may be disturbed by all the different dualities in the kitchen. But someone who's a, you know, practiced cook doesn't notice any of them. They just go in, knowing when you cook this preparation, just catch all the different things and it's done. Whether it's hot, cold, this, that, doesn't matter to them. They just go in and do their work. So someone who's advanced, whose mind is fixed, who has that vidarata, or has that fixed determination, they don't notice the material nature. Right? It's enough to notice how to work with it to get your work done. Right? That's the difference between determination and stubbornness. Determination is, I'm going to get out onto that veranda. And so then I've decided, you know, the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. So now I have this determination, I'm going out there. Now, when I get to that wall, I can either decide, okay, now maybe it's going to be a little bit longer, maybe even twice the distance for me to walk around and go outside the door, but I get what I want. That's determination. So I don't, the wall is inconsequential. It's an obstacle, but I don't get it. I involve myself. Stubborn means, no, I'm going to there and make that decision. So I, you know, have to break the wall or, you know, remove the window or do something. That's stubborn. So intelligent means just you notice the obstacles. The material nature is there. It's a fact. But we will just move with it to serve Krishna. So as the situations come up, we use them and engage them in Krishna's service. We remember Krishna. Like that. So
if you have opportunity to
engage
experience your karma, until nature manifests it, if you don't go for it, that karma is like resolved and then
you
expect to be unstable.
The point is, so then if due to the previous karma you get some fruit, so if you don't react to that fruit or become interested in it, then does the binding nature of that karma go away? Yes, that's what's going on. By previous activities, you're born in an aristocratic family, but you're not attracted by the wealth, the position, or prestige of that family. Then you continue and advance in your devotional life. You become attached to that prestige, your wealth, then at best we can perform devotional service in the mother ignorance. And there's every chance, because of this, you may become deviated. And then you think, because you're in the mode of passion and ignorance, you want some food, devotional service isn't giving it. You know, if I was in the material world, people would respect me so much. Here I'm just one of the gods, you know. You bring the biggest person, you know. I mean, I see it myself. You bring, you know, it's like before, we bring, you know, Alfred Ford. So in his scene, he would be considered quite big. Probably most people on the planet would have heard of at least his grandfather, maybe not him, but they know his grandfather. Okay. So then, but when he came and sit down here for prasad, I remember the local boys were serving, it didn't matter who he was. You know, it's just, he got when they decided they were going to feed him. That's all. So then when they decide, well, in this, you know, no one respects me enough around here, this, that, and I'm a big man, then you may reject devotional service. But if you think, yes, now Krishna's teaching me, actually, I'm thinking I'm the big man, but actually I'm just a Krishna servant, then one advances dynamically. So you can take that fruits and either try to enjoy them or not. And then they just evaporate, they disappear. Because it's an illusion anyway. See, we're thinking, I am the doer. I thought, I endeavored, I got. But I thought, then because I wanted to do it, the Lord sanctions, the modes of nature allow me to endeavor. They move the body, they allow me to move the different things, I influence people, you know, I arrange different things. But that's all the modes of nature doing that for me. Then I will call that my endeavor. And I think because of that, that's giving me now my fruit. But if you understand that actually it's all being done by material nature, it's not me anyway, then where's the involvement?
The idea that, okay, I won't get involved, I won't touch it. That's still
then the point is I am not going to do it. So this discussion then comes up in the 18th chapter. The Gita. This is directly Arjuna's point. So now, after, you know, he's heard the whole Gita, he's still bewildered on two words. Krishna's seeming interchangingly use of the words sannyas and tyag, or renunciation. And he seems to use them as synonyms. At the same time, as the situations in which he explains them seem to also have some difference. So he wants to know, what is that difference? You know, what is the meaning? So then Krishna points out that the basic, they're the same. One is that you're giving up the activities that create a fruit, like what's just doing now, okay, I won't endeavor. So that is supposedly sannyas. I won't endeavor, means I won't do those activities that give fruit. But, yeah. And then the other person is, I do the endeavor, but the fruit's not mine. The fruit belongs to the Lord. So he gets the endeavor, but that fruit is given to Krishna. So both end up with nothing. But the one who has given up the, how you say, who engages that in that activity and gives the fruit is considered better of the two. Because they actually attain the purpose of renunciation, of sannyas. Means you want to give up the activity because you don't want the material fruit. But unless you have something an alternative, the living entity is active by nature. He's not inactive. So therefore, this sannyas has given up the activity, but not what is he going to do. So unless he has some activity that's being done for the Lord, then he ends up with no activity. How he'll purify himself? Because you simply made the determination, I'm not going to engage in material nature. That doesn't mean you're pure. It means you're intelligent enough to understand the difference. That it doesn't mean you come to the pure stage. So therefore, he has no method to purify himself. Because jnana without work doesn't give realization. It's the meaning of Om Tat Sat. The activity begun with Om the endeavor with Om, done in the mood of knowledge, Tat, then is given realization through Sat, through the eternal. Then one becomes purified. So he's saying of the two, therefore, Krishna points that comment very strongly in his purports there, that anyone in the Daivavarnashram system who does their duty without the attachment to it, doesn't matter what the varna or the ashram, they're all sannyasis. They actually are sannyasis. Therefore, the Daivavarnashram system practiced on the platform of Nishkam Karma Yoga is in its own tattva. That is what Prabhupada gave us. Right? It's a very special tattva. Well, if you're sakam, you're performing sakam karma yoga, means you're doing it for Krishna, but you still want some of the fruits, then it drops down into the varnas and ashrams you are situated in there, because you identify with it. If you want the fruit, means you identify with it. So then it takes on a different flavor. With the nishkam, everybody is sannyas. But for social structure and all that, therefore there's respect and this and that, depending upon age and different knowledge and different things, just to create interaction, right? Just like all the souls in the spiritual world are the same. But for rasa, then Krishna is given a different social structure so they can interact with each other, right? The gopis, because they're younger, they respect the older gopis. So when Radharani comes to the house of Mother Jashoda, she offers her obeisances to Mother Jashoda. And because of Mother Jashoda being older, then she's compassionate on Radharani and embraces her and pats her on the head, you know, asks her how she is, like this. But they're both the internal potency. But the distinction is made so that rasa can be affected. So even in the Daivavarnashram, in Nishkam Karma, the distinctions are maintained for just the social thing established in rasa, or exchange between the devotees. But it's very subtle and light. It's just enough for that. It's not more than that. But when you come into sakam, then they're established very clearly. And there must be great distinction between them, very clean lines between them. Otherwise, no one can function, because they want the results of the fruit. And if they see someone else is getting a result, is getting a fruit of something they figure should be theirs, then they're getting that out of shape. Well, in the nishkam, no one cares. No one's attached to fruit. Like that, so no one worries. No one worries. But let us say you have a temple president, and they had some smaller arrangement, some smaller facility. Now we're talking nishkam. He's living in a very small place. It's enough. It works. Then, with time, they're able to get more facility. Some new devotees come. Then, this new devotees, they get a bigger facility. Right? So, on the Nishkam platform, you don't care. Because I have my facility. You know, Krishna said this, they got it. You know, everything goes on nicely. Because there's no need of working on distinction. You're the president, so they respect you, but your business is take care of them, and you respect them as the body works very nicely. Very nice subtle. So Nishkam doesn't matter. Sakam, we brought it into Sakam. Now it's natural that the president should have the better place. So when they get the new place, president will move out of his old place into the new place, and the new devotee will move into the old place. I mean, it has to be like that. It may naturally work like that. Maybe no one else is there, and it was a bit small, and moved in. But it's just, that just happens. It just happens. The other one, it must be because of prestige. Because one thinks that one is doing, so then one wants the fruits. Therefore, one has to get what goes with the thing. So one will match those up very nicely. Well, in the Nishkam, one doesn't have to worry about those things. It's just whatever is one does the needful. You know, according to one's nature, but it's much more, the goodness is the main foundation, much more light, much more flexible. So So it takes a totally different flavor. But still it's being done for Krishna. So it's still superior to the mundane varnashram, which is just being you're following rules and regulations, which is pious. And that. But you're not doing it for Krishna. So that's still material. But the sakam is spiritual. This is being done for Krishna. Though the devotee gets caught up in this whole cycle of action and reaction because they feel I am enduring, I deserve my fruits. And because of this, there's so much difficulty in myself. You know? Somebody does something and then has put so much fruit work into it, so much fruit has come from that, and then if they decide to change services and go somewhere else and become, you know, disturbed, then they feel I should get part of that. And then it just changes the whole flavor. Immediately you drop from transcendental and goodness into passion and ignorance. And that naturally disturbs the whole atmosphere. Goodness is very subtle, so you just throw one person with that mood of passion, it just upsets the whole temple. And then if you have many such persons, then it's even more of these things. Like that. So it's very, very subtle. So actually, if we look at it, all the problems that we have, what we call issues and social problems, they all come back to this. Situating ourselves properly within karma yoga, and whether we're in nishkama sakama. Means what Prabhupada gave us in the early days was nishkama. No, the devotees were untrained, inexperienced. Now devotees are very trained and experienced. So what was appreciated before in early days was not the inexperience of the devotees, but that was the innocence and the wonderfulness and the simplicity. No, because of the Nishkam Karma Yoga, that was what was appreciated. Everyone was working just for Krishna. Even if they did it badly, still they were trying to do it for Krishna without attachment to the results. So they tried to do their duties, though they weren't doing it nicely. We didn't know much about what were duties. As time goes, then it becomes introduced what actually is duty, what actually is a temple president, what actually is a pujari, what actually is, you know, a sankirtan devotee. So then as the duties become known more, and then we endeavor to understand and apply that in our life, then we're supposed to keep that same nishkam attitude. But if we change now, before it was, I came in with no training and just I became president. You know, in those days, just after 3 months, you went out and started your own temple. You know, basically just had to know how to sing all the temple songs and chant your rounds and follow the four of the principles. And that's it. And you were qualified to open a temple. So you knew how to cook also. Lead a kirtan, cook, give a class. That was it. We could open a temple. So then we could go out. And then as we expand that, then we think, I'm doing so much, so then I want the fruit. And we drop from nishkan into sakam. So that creates a problem. Now before, the flavor was nice, though the interactions were rough, because no one knew what was the proper Vedic standard, the proper standard of Vaishnava etiquette. So therefore the roughness was there, but the atmosphere was proper. Now as we learn what is the proper atmosphere, and we change, manifestation, form, but we give up the mood, that's also going to not give satisfaction. Or worse is as we learn what is the proper directions, we reject those. Plus we drop from nishkam. So we're on sakam and non-Vedic, because it's very disturbing. So nishkam, non-Vedic, we'll at least have the right atmosphere. Right? And if you're not attached, if someone shows you what's the proper thing to change. Then if you drop into sakam, that is non-Vedic, that's terrible. Absolutely disturbance. But if one is sakam and following the Vedic, at least one interacts properly with others, knows one's position, and relates like that. So at least there'll be social harmony. But what Krishna is recommending in Prabhupada and all the acharyas is understanding the Vedic principles and following the nishkam. So you have the nishkam karma yoga that is done on the Vedic principles, Vedic and Vaishnava principles. that then is, that is Daiva Varanasi of the topmost platform. And that, then there's total satisfaction, and one gets goes out and goes back to Godhead. Sakam, there'll always be some difficulty, even if you're following the Vedic, because material nature never gives you what you want anyway. But at least it'll be as close as you can get without problem. And then if you go into a non-Vedic, then the demoniac tendencies come up, the nature comes up, and then it's hell. One just has to look at the modern world to understand that. They don't know how to run governments, run families, run anything, because they don't follow the proper principles. Therefore, it's a total disturbance. And then if one then gives up devotional service, then that's the worst. So that's the point. Continue or stop here?
I just think, of course, sorry, also, back to Sanatana, he also said nonsense words leads to nonsense thoughts, which tends to appear like sound actually can control the thoughts, the mind. Although we've been talking all about the mind, but still, there is that sound that
we have to affect. Yeah, no, very much. That's just taking another avenue. Because we've been dealing with the Gita for the last like couple of weeks, so we're just taking that angle. That's given in the Upadeshamrita. See, because the discussion here, we're basically taking it from just the overall, the culture and the philosophy. In other words, synthesizing the philosophy and religion. But now, as Vaishnavas, then we have a particular way that we deal with this and view. It means Krishna in the Gita says divine and demoniac natures, qualities. We call that anarthas in proper Vaishnava etiquette. So we have our own terminology. So when you go into that, in other words, we were discussing here more the sambandha, or the relationship, us, material nature, Krishna, and how to establish that. But when you go into Abhideya, you actually change the flavor of the presentation. Then it's what you're giving. So this is the next step. It means practically applying what we're talking about is your point. Because then in Upadeshamrita, then it's pointed out that from the tongue. The tongue talks prajalpa, the mind becomes disturbed and then gets angry. Like that. So if you can control the tongue, so you speak proper words, then the mind becomes controlled. That's the practical application. Gita is basically to establish that we're going to follow the devotional path and the Vedic culture. That's what the Gita is for. Then, once that's accepted, then we immediately move into the platform, the Bhagavatam, which is how that's done. So the nectar devotion and all these others are coming from a supplementing the Bhagavatam. Then we come to the point you made. So that itself then becomes a whole.
Yeah,
whole
another class.
Yeah. It's very good. You had some point left too, or this one? Mataji's point on Jananivas, is you do some work and then you get the results. So even as a devotee, the prarabdha karma doesn't go away. You desired, you got the fruit. She gave the example of Dhruva Maharaj. He desired a kingdom bigger than his father's. So even though he saw the Lord and didn't want it anymore, he saw now what he wanted is instead of the jewel, he wanted broken pieces of glass. But he's still stuck with that kingdom. And even today, he's still sitting there, you can see him, that he's still running that kingdom. But because it's devotional service, and because he's the pure devotee, then the whole now it becomes exemplary. All his activities are then done for. I mean, it described earlier in this canto that the whole structure of the universe is all done in a spiral that goes up with Dhruva Loka as its central focus. So actually everything comes down out of there. Like that. Everything that's the center pivotal point. So he's still stuck with, he wanted a big management, so he got it. But now he's doing it. That's a very good point. So we'll end here. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya Taimoga Prema. Everything that's the center pivotal point. So he's still stuck with, he wanted a big management, so he got it. But now he's doing it. That's a very good point. So we'll end here. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya Taimoga Prema.